This is Kid Schreiner, the voice of the Green Arrow.
This is George Newbern, the voice of Superman.
You are listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam.
Streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
I came to warn you, but I was captured and imprisoned here. They wouldn't listen.
Big surprise.
I sense you do not trust me. Perhaps this will help. I am John Jones.
Don't take it personally, John. He doesn't trust anyone.
A wise policy.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 279 of the DCAU Review. I am Liam, and with me, as he always is Cal. Cal, we have a special treat for the listeners. It's a five Saturday month, which of course means next week we've got an Elseworlds. But having just come to the end of a big, dramatic, climactic final battle in last week's review of Divided We Fall, it didn't quite feel right to just throw in another random episode of Justice League or Justice League Unlimited to cap that off, so we decided we would go back to another tried and true little extra feature that we do on these shows, which is of course one of our character spotlight episodes on one of our original seven Justice Leaguers. And by my count, outside of the big three, we've only got one left to cover here in volume one of this character's character spotlight.
That is right, Liam. We dusted off the big shiny light and made sure that Batman logo hit sticker had been removed off of it. So it's just a big shiny spotlight at this point, the DCAU character spotlight to be specific. And you're right, we have had a month devoted talking about The Flash, at least volume one of The Flash, where we talked about all his season one Justice League appearances and his very first appearance, of course, in Superman, the animated series. We talked about Hawkgirl and everything leading up to and including, I believe, the betrayal of the Justice League. We didn't go much beyond that. And then we did a
season one.
Did we just do season one for her?
Yeah. Yeah.
Time flies. I never know what exactly we cover. So we covered just season one with her also. And then we also did a Green Lantern / Jon Stewart and the Green Lanterns week, where we shined a green shaded spotlight on the Kyle Rayner and the Corps and mostly Jon Stewart for that one, covering his season one appearances. And we're keeping that theme alive here. As you mentioned, it would take a little bit to talk more about Wonder Woman. We have maybe a Wonder Woman themed month coming up in the future. So that one could be on the horizon here. But as we talked about last week, it's going to be a little difficult to do a Superman or Batman spotlight month. It also seems a little bit silly, seeing as how they got their own shows. So they kind of had their own spotlights for several seasons. So we might do some themed spotlight episodes relating to those characters. We've been kicking ideas around. And feel free, if you're listening at home and have an idea for a Batman or Superman themed spotlight, be a specific category, shoot it to us at DCAU Review, and we'll certainly consider it. But for this month, speaking of green, we are sticking with John Jones, also known as the Martian Manhunter. And this week we are going to answer the question, Liam, do they ever refer to him as the Martian Manhunter in this series? Find out today. It's going to be plenty of fun.
That's right. So, spoiler alert, the answer is not technically in this series. He is called that in a JLU episode, quite a bit down the line. But for the main series, he's only called Jean by his teammates and perhaps the Martian by his enemies in this series. So we have a lot to talk about with this Jean Jones / Martian Manhunter character spotlight. We're going to tackle all of his season one appearances, and then we'll also delve into, of course, some tie-in comics and toys and things like that, as we always do on these character spotlights episodes. But of course, Cal, we'd be remiss not to mention that this episode, despite the fact that we have no IMDb synopsis to read this week, since we're not reviewing any one episode, we do, of course, still have to say that today's episode is brought to you by the Pod Tower.
Absolutely. If you're a fan of podcasts that discuss DC animation, we have a YouTube channel just for you. Head over to youtube.com/thepodtower today, and we invite you to subscribe. You get not one, not two, but as of this recording, there are three different podcasts that will be readily available at your disposal. We have Tim Talk, which covered all of the DCAU's content and additional content beyond that. Their entire catalog is up there, ready for your listening pleasure. We also have the ongoing Jump on the Batwagon series from the folks at Watchtower Database. And you have the entire podcast library of a little podcast known as the DCAU Review. Hey, that's us. All available in one convenient spot for your listening pleasure on YouTube. Head over to youtube.com/thepodtower today and subscribe.
Absolutely. So kicking off this Martian Manhunter character spotlight, we will, of course, as we always do, mention that the character's origins, of course, appeared first in the pages of Detective Comics comics. And usually that's just a funny thing I say because that's what the DC stands for. But in Jean's case, he actually did debut in an issue of Detective Comics, Detective Comics number 225 in November of 1955. And it was created by Joseph Samuelson, and Joe Serta was the artist. So a character with a long tenure in DC Comics. He's kind of one of the perennial Justice League roster members, no matter what variation, the original incarnation all the way through to the kind of the classic J.M. DeMatteis, Keith Giffen, Justice League International days, the Grant Morrison and Howard Porter, JLA run in the later 90s and early 2000s. Jean's just, he's always around. He's always there. If you're doing a Justice League, this guy really is on the short list at all times, no matter what the era.
No, you're absolutely right. He's an interesting character, I think, for a lot of reasons. Depending on what incarnation of him you use, he seems to always have a similar backstory, at least, where he's kind of got a Superman-esque backstory, obviously, being the last member of his kind and, feeling like a fish out of water, learning a new culture, certainly here on Earth. I guess the only difference is adapting to a culture as an adult versus a little mm-hmm. baby growing up on Earth. So all of that, as well as he's got a fascinating set of powers, as we will certainly see as we go through his season one appearances here. Everything from shape-shifting, flying, of course, being able to read minds. He's truly one of, if not the most overpowered character in the mm-hmm. league. And typically his main main vulnerability would be fire. So that's typically how he has been and continues to be in. And the Justice League animated version that we're going to be talking about here is no exception. Fire is his main arch nemesis. So real strong, real interesting. You get to have a lot of fun. And I think when they decided to use him in Justice League, they went with a character that would be certainly visually interesting, somebody that they could have a lot of fun with in the way that they visualize his powers. And I wonder if they understood sort of the character arc at the time that they would take this character on, because it is certainly an interesting one. It starts off very early on with a very fascinating origin story. He kind of gets the origin tale in his first episode. And then by the end of the series, by the end of Justice League Unlimited, there's a lot of character growth and a lot of finding himself in and his place here on Earth. So it's a fascinating character, no matter what incarnation, and one that I am certainly glad was used in the DCAU, because it added an additional dimension and a humanity to the league in a weird way. Saying that as a character that's supposedly born as a Martian.
Absolutely, yes. As we often talk about with these superpowered characters, when they're treated well, when they're written well, they are just as relatable as any other fictional character. They just happen to, in this case, be green and wear blue underpants. So with that in mind, we will move into the first appearance in the DCAU for John Jones. That, of course, is in the three-part premiere of Justice League, the original Justice League animated series, in November of 2001. And of course, it was three episodes technically, but it was all aired originally as one sort of television movie event. And it starts out as the formations of this Justice League, with Superman and Batman kind of investigating this strange alien invasion, which is first going by sort of very quietly and with a lot of espionage. But Superman keeps having these strange psychic image, all of these images sort of beamed into his head. He's not quite sure what's going on as he continues to disarm. He decides he's going to disarm all the nukes and save the world and create world peace through this message. And of course, right at that moment, that's when these strange white aliens, the name of which are, I know a sore spot for our friends at the Watchtower database. They're not called the aliens. The white aliens are not called the Imperium. The big pink dude is the Imperium. I don't think the white guys have a name.
Correct.
But yes, this alien invasion is happening. Finally, Superman realizes what those psychic pulses were, and he flies off to a government facility where he and Batman are met with none other than Jean himself, who has been captured. And we quickly find out not only what he can do as in order to try to make Batman feel more at home. He decides to transform his normal true Martian form into that of a more superheroic style. And then he informs them sort of some of the backstory that he had come to Earth to try to warn the U.S. government about this invasion, but that he had been captured and studied since he had been there some months ago. And now it's too late as the aliens arrive. And we quickly find out that not only did he come here as a warning, he's also kind of a walking billboard for what could happen to Earth if these aliens are not stopped, as he informs the Justice League after they form up, when Green Lantern, Hawkgirl, and Wonder Woman, along with the Flash, show up to save Batman and Superman from the aliens. We get a little bit of a history lesson as Jean explains that, as many of you will know, he is in fact the last surviving Martian. And the reason all the other Martians are gone is because they themselves were invaded by this alien force. And though they did finally manage to defeat it with some confusing, unexplained, paralyzing gas, they did not. It was at great cost, as Jean at the end of the battle is quite literally the last man on Mars.
The attack was successful, but the cost was dear. I was the only survivor, the last of my kind. I sealed up their citadel to keep them in a constant state of suspended animation. For over 500 years, I stood guard over them. But then, while I was in a hibernation cycle, astronauts from Earth unsealed the stronghold and accidentally revived the invaders.
Wait. Those astronauts never said anything about finding life on Mars.
Some pencil pusher in Washington probably decided it should be classified information.
With all the Martians gone, the invaders had nothing left to feed upon, so they turned their sights to Earth. I narrowly escaped and came here to warn of the coming danger. While I was being held against my will, the invaders sent advance agents to disable Earth's defenses.
That's why they sabotaged the deep space monitoring network, so we couldn't detect their activities.
We've got to stop them before it's too late.
It may already be too late.
And that does set us up for later references and certainly more dimension to the Jean character having that tragic backstory. But he actually gets to kind of be set up for this particular episode, Liam, for episodes 2 and 3 of that original Secret Origins as one of the major keys to saving the world. He's introduced as Earth's final hope, as he's initially discovered by Superman in the lab there. And then through 2 and 3 or parts 2 and 3, he teams up with the Leaguers, and we get some fun fisticuffs between him and the Martians, giving the Leaguers a bit of a backstory on who they are, as you mentioned, how they came to power, and then ultimately comes face to face with the Imperium in part 3, and one of many, what would be many great little stanzas there by Jean, verbal spats as he goes up against the Imperium and ends up dragging the Imperium into the sunlight as he realizes that sunlight is exactly what they are trying to avoid and ultimately is their vulnerability. And that whole final scene in part 3, as he has the tentacle kind of jamming, it's a very disturbing visual. Mm-hmm. Back-to-back weeks talking about tentacles here on on the DCAU podcast. Our tentacle fans are really getting their kicks out of it. But yes, the tentacles of the Imperium sort of running up and invading Jean's face and sort of providing this electroshock as he's going through it. And he realizes, as I mentioned, that they are vulnerable to the sun.
No! Batman?
It can't be.
I mentally shielded him so he couldn't be detected.
What have you done?
Reverse the ion charge.
The crystal! Destroy it!
It's shielded!
Underground and shun the light. Why? Does it burn your pale, putrid skin?
Ooh, that's one nasty sunburn.
And as the sun rays burst through, Jean talks about how they avoid the sun because it blisters their skin, and he grabs the tentacle and pulls the Imperium directly into the sun so that it yells out with this horrible screech and begins melting and bubbling. It's from my recollection, we haven't reviewed that episode in quite some time. In fact, it was way back on episode 30 of the podcast, if you want to check that one out in the archives. But yeah, Secret Origins. It's a disturbing visual as the Imperium skin begins to bubble and boil, and there's these popping and all of this. It's pretty entertaining, matched, of course, with Carl Lumbly's Martian Manhunter voice, as we'll talk about later on here. But yeah, it's a pretty memorable scene. And Jean is clearly ready to make a rather huge impact on the show, as he does end up being sort of the star and the man that is ultimately responsible for saving the Earth from this invading force.
That's right. This is another one of those powers that you wonder why he never used it again, but he mentally shields Batman so he can't be detected. And as Batman is able to create some sort of device that reverses these giant alien devices that are causing like permanent darkness and allows the sun to shine, as you mentioned, and that is the undoing of these aliens, as Jean and the rest of the Justice League are able to take them out and save the trapped humans that have been replaced by the shape-changing aliens as well. So it is a All's well that ends well, although even from the end of this very first episode, as Superman makes the speech and they're forming the team, it's clear that that Jean still doesn't really exactly know what his place is going to be in the world. But it is nice, at least in this moment, to know that he's not alone. And, you know, he's around some people that maybe know what he's going through. So as the series goes on, we didn't have to wait long to see Jean again, as he does appear in Blackest Night, parts one and two. Not a lot of big moments for him in this one. As we said, a lot of these earlier episodes, it kind of just, we picked one guy or girl to kind of focus in on, and the other characters were more just there as exposition bouncers and you know, punchers for the action beats. But he is there. He and Superman, along with Hawkgirl, do discover the giant device they're projecting an invisibility around the planet that Jon Stewart has been framed for blowing up. You know, that old tale. Mm-hmm. And then he, of course, with the rest of the Justice League, help the Green Lantern Corps stop the Manhunters at the end. Not much to touch on there for Jean moments, but it sees again. We're forming the bonds. We're seeing he's a supporting character, as we see some fleshing out of the other leaguers as well.
Yeah, and, we get to see also. I don't know if this was intentional or again, we know that the late great Dwayne McDuffie played meticulous attention to the details and trying to keep continuity straight. But we do have a brief conversation in this episode, to my recollection, where they're trying to get the different leaguers on board to help in this situation. And they go to Jean to sort of coordinate things. He mentions that the Batman would only say he's busy and he's keeping track of where Wonder Woman is. So obviously we know later on in further seasons, Jean would become the guy that's responsible for, you know, making sure the leaguers are assigned as the size of the team grew. He's the man that's running coordinators, so to speak. So he gets to show a little bit of that there. And if you're interested in hearing our review of that episode, it's episode 31 in the archives.
Absolutely. And next, of course, we would see Jean again in the very next episodes, The Enemy Below, parts one and two, which, of course, are our big epic reintroduction of Aquaman to the DCAU. And again, not a ton for Jean to do character wise. He does at one point disguise himself as Aquaman when there's an attempt made on Aquaman's life by Deadshot, who, of course, we come to find out was hired by none other than Aquaman's own brother Orm. And Jean is along for the ride as the Justice League try to stop a nuke that's going to set off a tidal wave. Is that what happens in that episode? It's been a while.
That sounds right. It's been a while because that was episode 32 of the podcast. Check that out in the archives. But yeah, that's a fun one. And again, certainly notable for Jean's turn. It shows a little bit of his power set there. You have a little bit of fun of him acting as Aquaman in that scene where he fools Deadshot. Deadshot is attempting to assassinate him. So we get that little bit of Jean's power set there, but it truly is more focused on Aquaman. It is a great episode, obviously, and it's one that that we gave high scores to, from my recollection. But it's definitely not a Jean focused episode in a way that anything else would be memorable enough for me to say, oh yeah, that's the episode where Jean does X.
Absolutely. And moving on to one of the only season one episodes we haven't covered. This will be coming up in a future character theme month, as you alluded to, but Paradise Lost parts one and two were Jean's next appearances. And again, that's a Wonder Woman focused story and deals with her going back to Themyscira to try to save her mother and the rest of the Amazons from Hades, who has taken over. But there is something there, obviously, at the end with Diana, because she brings men onto the island to help save the Amazons. She is, in fact, banished at the end. And there's kind of a kinship, which we again see maybe explored not so much in this season, but in later seasons, of of Jean and Diana, and even Superman to an extent, I think, of the loss and the, you know, the almost, you know, forced orphanhood of their lives at certain points. So there's even if it's not necessarily, there's some building blocks. I feel like that's a lot of season one. Mm-hmm. There are some more overt stuff, especially like John and Shaira stuff kind of kicks off in the season pretty overtly. But I feel like a lot of season one Justice League, as we're going through, it's like, okay, they don't really touch on that deeply now, but that relationship is built up based on these sorts of adventures where, you know, where Jean sees Diana kind of losing her home in a way, the same way that he's lost his.
Yeah, I agree with you. I haven't seen that. I feel like we had that episode on tape, so we watched a lot back in the day. Mm-hmm. And maybe it was on the first release of the Justice League DVD, I think. There was like maybe six episodes on a DVD back in the day that we had prior to the full season release. So definitely mm-hmm. saw that episode a whole bunch, but was not one that was that I've seen since then. So it'll be interesting to see you know, those themes explored once we get around to doing it. But nothing that I can, again, nothing that comes to mind that was a pivotal Jean moment in that episode.
Absolutely. And from there, another episode which I would say doesn't really focus on Jean too much, but he is there. It's a big one. It's notable because it's one of a few episodes in this first season where we see all seven leaguers in action against the beginnings of the Injustice Gang of Lex Luthor's group of supervillains that he puts together to try to kill Superman. And Jean is there. I think maybe the best moment of this two-parter might be, you know, Batman is injured by Copperhead in this episode and decides he's going to go out and investigate alone. And there's a moment where Jean like really tries to connect with them and tell him, you know, you're valued and you're part of this team and you don't have to prove yourself to anybody. And Batman just cuts him off and says, I'm leaving unless you want to stop me.
The Venom antidote. It's working.
Welcome back. We were afraid we'd lost you.
Luthor and the others. What happened?
They got away. All but Copperhead.
I'm headed down to Stryker's to interrogate him.
All right. Let's go.
No, you're staying here. That Venom almost killed you.
So?
So, you're staying here.
You really should be resting. I know this must be hard for you, feeling vulnerable. You're the only one of us without special powers. But you don't need to prove yourself. You're a valued member of this team, and we're only trying to...
I'm taking the shuttle. Unless you want to try and stop me.
No.
And John just looks at him, and again, this goes into the brilliance of some of the of Carl Lumbly as a performer and the humor he could sometimes inject in even into a character that is so kind of serious a lot of the time, which he just responds, no. and lets Batman go. I think there's also some shape shifting in this one for him as well. So he So there's there's some fun to be had again. That's more just the fun of that is, one, you know, the return of some characters we saw in the previous animated series like Joker and Lex, and also just seeing all the leaguers together fighting some familiar faces in the supervillains.
Yeah, good guys versus bad guys, Lex and the Joker versus the Justice League, and you get all these other new baddies in this episode involved. And yeah, it's a fun one for sure. Check out our review of that episode, our original review of that episode, at least back on episode 43 in the archives at dcaureview.com or on your favorite podcast app.
That's right. And moving on to one of Jean's bigger moments in the first season here, we have War World parts 1 and 2, which of course features Superman and Jean getting stranded on the titular named planet of War World. And Superman, of course, thrown into a Superman and Jean both thrown into a prison. And Superman, of course, sort of made into a gladiator to fight for this war world's amusement, and Jean due to some sort of because the episode had to happen,
right.
Jean's powers aren't working right.
Right, so, the planet's atmosphere for some reason affected Jean.
That's right. So Jean is able to escape the prison without, but has to leave Superman behind. And then Jean does get to play a pretty memorable role at the beginning of part two, as it appears Superman is about to be put to death for refusing to finish off his gladiatorial opponent. Jean kind of creates an uprising, so to speak, turns Superman into a literal symbol in this moment. And he does it as any good chant at a wrestling match or a sports event will tell you. He just starts saying his name over and over again.
Yeah, it's a pretty memorable and fun part of the episode. He says Superman won, and if you don't if you kill him anyway, we're gonna riot. So he in a way saves Superman's life in a way that he, rather than using his fists, he uses his advanced Martian brain to figure out a way to recognize that Mongol in that moment wasn't looking for an entire people to revolt against him. So he had to acquiesce to what the crowd wanted. And yeah, it's an interesting episode. Maybe not one of our favorites story wise. Another one of those that we had seen a bunch of times. I don't remember giving this necessarily high marks, but there are some memorable moments for sure. We reviewed that one actually not it is that long ago thinking about it, but it doesn't feel that long ago. Episode 187 of the podcast. You can check that one out in the archives if you want to hear all of our thoughts on that particular episode.
That's right. He also he tries to use his powers to pretend to be Mongol to get them to decommission the Death Star laser that Mongol suddenly has.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't quite work out. But thankfully, Hawkgirl and Green Lantern arrive to save the day and help him out of that. But yes, that'll move us on to our next appearances, where he is in The Brave and the Bold, not the cartoon, but the episode, the individual two episodes of Justice League entitled that. Of course, that's the Gorilla Grodd debut episode, really almost entirely a Flash episode, a Flash story along with Green Lantern, kind of establishing that buddy cop relationship between those two. But Jean is along for the ride. He's part of the secondary Justice League crew in that episode with Batman, Wonder Woman, and Hawkgirl, who go to Gorilla City, get captured, and then ultimately are able to stop the missiles from destroying the city at the end of the episode. So not much to sink our teeth into character-wise, but hey, he's there and there are a bunch of giant gorillas. It's a wacky little episode.
Yeah, that one's memorable. That's more of a Flash episode. In fact, I'm pretty sure we covered that during our Flash themed month last year. So you can check that one out in the archives on episode 221 of the podcast. Not a ton for Jean to do in that episode. Certainly more of a Flash centric episode, but hey, as you mentioned, it's an entertaining episode. You have the Gorilla Grodd origin and Gorilla City, not to be confused with Bird City, which is a different city that is made up completely of birds, where Mr. Wing originated from.
Classic. That is a DCAU review classic. We're bringing it back. Never forget.
That's right,
Bird City. But yes, we will move on to another episode, one of the other episodes, which will be saved for our Wonder Woman month, that being Fury Parts 1 and 2, where Arisia, the evil, not really an Amazon, gets a little bit too excited about the idea of a world with no men and decides to make like a nerve gas that only affects men or something. That wasn't the most interesting episode from my recollection, but we haven't given it a full critical look just yet. Like I said, probably coming sometime in the next year. But not a lot for Jean, although he does, among the as all the other male leaguers do, he does fall victim to this male only poison gas that Arisia has unleashed on the world, that Wonder Woman and Hawkgirl have to go save the world from.
Yep. It's it's an episode that happens. I will be interested to see where it falls on the scale of things. All I can remember is all of the leaguers laying shirtless in the watchtower, all the male leaguers laying shirtless in the watchtower as they're trying to recover from this horrible, horrible poison that's been released to kill all the men. So that's the only thing I remember from the episode. I don't remember Jean's part in that episode, but I'm sure he's there, and we'll have plenty to talk about once we get an opportunity to review that for Wonder Woman month.
Absolutely. But from an episode we have very little to say about to an episode we have almost nothing but things to say about, that being, of course, Legends Part 1 and 2. Though Jean is not the main character of those episodes, it's very much a Green Lantern-focused story and an overall love letter to the golden age of DC Comics. Jean plays a pretty important part as the guy kind of ultimately putting together the mystery of what is happening, along with John and Shayera doing some investigating as they arrive in this sort of strange alternate 1940s world with, you know, old timey cars and very over the top supervillains and a group of heroes called the Justice Guild. But Jean keeps having these sort of strange flashes of a world on fire, nuclear holocaust, something is not right here. And towards the end of part two, he finally puts together that it is none other than young Ray, who has sort of played to this point in the two parts, has played sort of a pastiche of Burt Ward's Robin. Mm-hmm. Just a sign of a kid who's hanging around and throwing out exclamations, throwing out catchphrases. It turns out that he's actually a horrifying mutant who was damaged and changed by the nuclear energy that has ravaged this version of Earth and has used his newfound powers to psychically create a dream world for himself with these superheroes that he idolized as a kid before they all perished in this great war. And Jean and the rest of the Justice League are ultimately saved by the Justice Guild, who, even though these are fictional versions of those heroes, fictional versions within the fictional show, created memories, really, they still are enough like their original counterparts that they know they have to give their lives to save the real Justice League, and they do it. And so that's a very special episode. I know it's very near and dear to you, especially, Cal. Not a huge Jean episode. It's much more of a Green Lantern story, as mentioned, but Jean with a pretty big part to play as far as putting together those final chess pieces or puzzle pieces as to what the mystery exactly is.
Yeah, it's I think every opportunity we've had, I think every one of these spotlight episodes, because we've done Hawkgirl, we've done The Flash, we've done Green Lantern, and now we're doing Jean. We've had an opportunity to talk about this episode specifically, and it is a one near and dear to me, one of my favorite DCAU episodes, period, ever. It's just so great. I love everything about this episode. I love the homages to the silver and golden age of comic books. I love that these characters are sort of they're parodies of those characters, but not disrespectful in any way. So it is sort of that pre Brave and the Bold cartoon love letter to that era. And it's a lot of fun. This was multiverse before multiverse was in vogue, by the way. They talk about Tom Turbine does a whole soliloquy about the multiverse. So you get some before that was the most popular thing for comic book media to do. That was happening back in 2002 or whatever this was, 2001, 2002. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a fun episode. Jean plays mainly putting, as you mentioned, kind of putting the finishing touches at the end on uncovering the plot that has sort of been hanging around as to just what is going on and who is behind all of this mysterious behavior that's occurring and all of these coincidences that keep happening in this strange land. And as you mentioned, ultimately uncovering Rey as the disfigured person, mutant behind the whole charade. So yeah, there's some fun interactions, some opportunities that Jean gets to do to team up with the Justice Guild of America, as as do the rest of the members of the team. But yeah, not a Jean focus, but certainly I'll take any excuse to talk about this episode, which we originally covered on episode 44 of the podcast.
Absolutely, a stone cold classic, that one, and definitely one that we will revisit any chance we get, for sure. But moving on from there to what I would say is probably the signature episode for Jean, other than the pilot episodes, besides Secret Origins, and that is of course the two-part adventure, A Knight of Shadows, which is there's sort of a duality to it in the sense that we see the origins of Jason Blood and Etrigan, and we see him and how he was sort of led astray and ultimately betrayed by this bewitching mystical character called Morgan Le Fay, and now as she's sort of reared her ugly head once again and is trying to create a new world for her son to rule using this mysterious artifact, the Philosopher's Stone. She calls out to Jean directly to try to makes an appeal let's just say she makes him an offer that's very hard to refuse.
Yep, she decides that she's going to restore to him, or I guess in theory make him feel like he's restored to his long-lost Martian love and children, and it's tempting to him. I was trying to think, I'm sure this is a story trope that has been used over and over again, but the idea of the villainous character tempting your hero with something that they have long since desired, you know, a restoration of Jean's family and being back with those that he loved and lost in exchange for doing her bidding. And as you mentioned, it does mirror and follow the same thread as we get introduced at the very beginning of what happened to Jason Blood and ultimately how he was tied to and paired to the demon Etrigan. So you have that prologue that starts out the episode giving you the backstory of Jason Blood and Etrigan, and then you start to see this play out in the same way with Jean. And in a way, you do feel badly for Jean because he does long to be with people of his kind, to experience his life once again, the life that was taken away from him, and it all feels so real. And it seems like it's going to cost him very little. And it's ultimately he realizes at the end as he has turned away from the league, he's taken the stone, and the siren's call seems to be too much for him as he's committed to delivering the stone directly to Morgan Le Fay. Just as he's about to hand it over to her, the league seems defeated. Etrigan has also seemingly been defeated, all in this big battle that takes place in a castle. And as he's about to hand this stone over to her, he crushes it in his hand. And I love the interaction that he has with her as she asks him what he's done. And he says, the cost was too great. And that's after he's kind of realized and been, he's with it seconds before this, he was visually tempted with a reunion with his wife and children. And he realizes at that moment that the cost, the actual real cost of losing his family, his new adopted family and his home world would be too much in exchange for for this momentary respite of joining a mirage with his family. So it adds a little bit of context to just who Jean is, what he experiences on a day-to-day basis, how he feels about being the last of his kind on a strange planet, and then what it would be like to kind of have this offer that, you know, as a hero, would he be willing to sacrifice his heroic nature to get what he wanted, the thing that he desires the most, which is, you know, being reunited with his lost family. So it adds a dimension to him because it, in a way, this is kind of sounding waxing poetically here, but it does humanize the Martian character because yes. we see the vulnerabilities that he has. This character that we mentioned may be the very most powerful character of them all in the league. These he can read minds and shapeshift and fly and as you mentioned, sometimes create psychic barriers and do all these incredible
things. Turn himself to stone like he does in this episode.
Right. Turn invisible, phase through things. Like, yeah, he's pretty much the most powerful character, but this truly makes him very vulnerable. And we see that vulnerability that he has, while he doesn't have an actual family that he's protecting, that leaves him vulnerable in that way. And this, he's offered this thing that he believes impossible. And to him, that is his one desire, to be known, to experience, this life that he lost and that he thought he would never be able to experience again. And the humanization of that character in that moment, taking this larger than life hero and making him vulnerable, is what, we look for and appreciate in so many, many different forms of comic book writing. But certainly in this episode, it's a great episode. It's a great look at him. And ultimately, like I said, that moment where he has the stone and he extends it to her and she's about to take it from Morgan Le Fay, is about to take it from him. And he just crushes it at the last second and says the cost would be too much, with no emotion. He doesn't show any emotion, no sadness, no regret, nothing. It's just the Jean delivery. Stone cold, like just great. I love this episode and the development it does for that character.
Nothing will keep me from my loved ones, especially not you.
The stone. Give it to me.
Jean, my love, we're waiting.
No.
What have you done? You could have had anything you dreamed of. Your family, your whole world could have been yours again.
The price was too high. I see that now. You can no longer tempt me.
Absolutely, because and you get the sense that when he does do the right thing, when he does choose at the end of the day to not, damn the world for a chance at, an illusion of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
It's not totally dissimilar than what we see later on in Justice League Unlimited with for the man who has everything, where he's, what would it be like to live in, even if in the back of your mind you knew, what would it be like to be reunited with all of these people that you lost, your children, your wife, everyone, all of your people, what would it be like? And would that, the joy you felt, even knowing it wasn't truly real, be worth the trade-off in this case? And he ultimately does the right thing, but you don't get the sense that it's like this has damaged him further. Like this is, he's having to relive this horrible trauma and kind of lose his family all over again in this moment. So even though he ultimately makes the right decision, he still feels it's not a particularly uplifting or happy ending. He sort of apologizes to the rest of the league and for letting them down, and they, they sort of tell him that it's going to be okay. But it is this moment. There's a very famous episode we haven't gotten to yet in Batman where, the line is, sometimes there are no happy endings. And that's kind of what this episode represents, is that he's faced with that choice, and ultimately he makes the right choice. But as is often the case in real life, making the less selfish choice, making the right choice, is not always the choice that makes you feel better. And I think that's, again, a great example of taking a character who can do all these fantastical things like we've been talking about and making him as relatable as, you know, anybody you pass on the street every day. So a great job in that episode. Totally agreed there.
That episode, by the way, you can listen to our review of that episode in the archives on episode 45 of the podcast. That one quite a long time ago, but well worth checking out. Maybe we'll revisit again for a re-review at some point if we do a Etrigan month or something like that, where we revisited month of magic, perhaps.
That's now we're talking. That's a concept that we're definitely gotta get back to someday. But elsewhere in this final couple episodes we have to talk about this week, we have Jean briefly appearing in Metamorphosis parts 1 and 2, really mostly in part 2. Again, not a Jean episode. It's a Green Lantern and Metamorpho focused episode that Jean is one of the leaguers struck with trying to take down a giant green doughy slime monster based with the personality, or at least some of the personality traits of one Simon Stagg. So not much to write home about there, but a wacky little adventure to talk about nonetheless.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that one, by the way, check that out, episode 188 in the archives if you want to hear some just hilarious moments from that. We also recently discussed that on our interview with the great Len Yulee. Also, we talked about that episode briefly. So if you want to hear some insights and some general thoughts on that episode also, you can check that out. Check out the recent bonus interview with Len Yulee, a fun episode to review, even if you don't care about the Metamorphosis episode. But and then check out, as I mentioned, our review of that episode, 188 in the archives. It's an amusing episode. Again, kind of stands on its own, much more of a Green Lantern episode as he deals with his relationship with Metamorpho. But yeah, an interesting one, some interesting underlying themes. We talk about some of the surprising backstory and origin stories and creation of the Metamorpho character. So lots of good stuff on that episode. Not a ton of Jean stuff that I remember, though.
No, not really. But that does bring us to the final episode of season one, the final three episodes. This was another three-part bombastic epic that they gave us in The Savage Time, parts 1 through 3, where, of course, the Justice League, after returning to Earth and coming back to a world they don't exactly recognize, where a mastermind called Vandal Savage has suddenly taken over the entire Earth and somehow rewritten history so that the Nazis had won World War II. We after the Justice League has an interaction, the six members of the Justice League, not including Batman, who's a part-timer anyway.
In case we forgot.
But Jean and the rest of the Justice Leaguers first meet up with this freedom fighter alternate universe version of Batman, who agrees to help them find this this time portal. And then, of course, Jean with the rest of the Leaguers has to go back in time and try to stop Vandal Savage from upsetting the timeline. And again, not really a Jean focused episode across these three parts. It's a hoot. It's a really fun episode with so much fun just seeing the Justice League in the middle of a World War II battle scene. There's some incredible work, some incredible music in that episode. And Jean and the rest of the Justice Leaguers, of course, ultimately triumph and return to the present day, and Superman hugs Batman. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful episode, even if not a ton to write home about in the Jean department.
I think you're bearing the lead, because Jean is the one, first of all, that discovers cryogenically frozen Adolf Hitler.
Oh, that's right. That's the most bizarre scene in the history of these shows. How did I forget that?
A laptop?
This way, I thought I heard something.
Fascinating.
Ah!
We have Jean discovering frozen Hitler, that popsicle Hitler. That's the first one. It's revealed towards the end of part one that how Vandal Savage rose to power in Nazi Germany was he got rid of the insane, I forget what does he call him, that insane maniac or something like that he refers to.
A raving maniac,
that's right. And there's a scene where Jean walks past a laboratory and it's frozen Hitler.
John's response to seeing that is to say, fascinating.
Yes. And then later on, of course, he gets captured. Jean and Wonder Woman have to try and figure out, the source of where these mysterious weapons, the war wheels and this advanced technology, how they ended up coming into the hands of the Nazis. He, as I mentioned, that's him infiltrating a Nazi stronghold is where he discovers the frozen Hitler. And I hope Spotify doesn't like word check with AI and hear me saying that name a bunch of times and assume that we need to be banned from their platform. So I'm going to stop saying his name over and over again. But yes, in part two, I believe he gets captured ultimately by Vandal Savage. There's a pretty interesting torture scene where Jean is getting tortured by Jean, and he kind of wants to know exactly what they know about his plans. Jean ends up escaping and destroying the laptop computer from the future that has been giving Vandal Savage his competitive advantage during the war. And then at the end, he's a part of that flight battle, I think, with the Blackhawks. I seem to remember Jean helping in that fight as well, I think, going in between
So he ends up trapped on the, he's captured by Vandal Savage and his Emperor from Star Wars electric hand weapon.
Right.
And then I believe ultimately he's freed during that final battle with the big flying wings and everything. And yeah, so you have the Blackhawks and Superman and Hawkgirl and everyone active, and he's freed and rejoins the battle thanks to I believe Wonder Woman freeing him in that final battle.
Yeah, so we do get them fighting in that battle, as you mentioned, and then ultimately he's part of the Leaguers arriving back home safe and sound after saving the past from Vandal Savage. So certainly some memorable moments and scenes. The torture scene is pretty memorable of Jean being tortured, as you mentioned, with the electro gloves. And one of the most memorable interactions takes place in that first scene where Jean and the rest of the Leaguers are interacting with the Savage Time Batman. And they mm-hmm. run into this version of Batman, and he's asking for their help. Batman in this world is leading a resistance against the powers, the Nazis that have won the war. So it's at this point that they have to go back in time. And Jean, just before the Leaguers head back in time to fix the past, he looks at this version of Bruce Wayne / Batman and says, do you understand that if we change the past, this version of you will never have existed? And Batman looks at him and says, nothing would make me happier. Just a really cool little interaction there. Obviously more maybe perhaps of a Batman moment than a Jean moment. But I do love the fact that Jean at least appeals and helps him understand the weight of what's going on here. He's not just going to willy-nilly go back in the past and change it without the people here in this moment recognizing that this will erase their existence. So yeah, really, really, really good episode. Obviously, I mean, it's one of the seminal, best written, fun mm-hmm. episodes of the entire Justice League run. So unsurprisingly, one that we really, really enjoyed, and one to revisit. Another one, I'm sure, given the opportunity in the future, we'll do a re-review at some point. But that was episode 46 originally, when we did the first review of that.
Absolutely. And so that does wrap up our episode recap for the season one Jean episodes, though, as mentioned a couple times during our chats about these individual episodes, we'd be remiss, of course, not to mention once again the voice of Jean Jones, of course, you know, brought to us by the great casting and voice director Andrea Romano. We, of course, have the great Carl Lumbly as Jean Jones, had previously worked in the DCAU a few times as the Stalker on Batman Beyond. And then, of course, he would also voice Anansi the Spider on Static a few times as well. And you hear him a few other times. He pops up. I think he's the mayor in Speed Demons, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, indeed.
And maybe one or two other.
We hypothesized, in fact, that this was pre being captured by the U.S. government / White Martians Jean appearance on Earth.
I love that idea, and we're sticking with it. In fact, of course, Carl Lumbly's performances. We've already talked about a lot of his best moments, whether they be in episodes like Legends, Secret Origins, or of course, A Night of Shadows, perhaps most famously. There's a nice little tidbit in an interview he gave where he mentioned, you know, he himself, of course, is a you know, is the child of immigrants, and you know, he sort of was able to bring some of his own life experience into the role of Jean, and kind of the idea of not only, you know, not only was he in this strange new place, but there was no old home to go back to for Jean, and he could kind of you know, he kind of identified with that feeling, being a kid moving to the States when he was young. So I thought that was a nice, interesting bit of his own personal process of getting into the character. And then, of course, his work with the other Justice Leaguers of course, George Newbern as Superman and Kevin Conroy as Batman, Susan Eisenberg as Wonder Woman, and everyone else. He gets, like I said, his interactions, some of the comedic, more understated moments, whether it's him playing off of Batman, as mentioned, or playing off of Michael Rosenbaum as the Flash, he could be a little bit funny as well. And it's not, even though he's mostly a very serious character, he does get some moments of even so sometimes he's playing the Debbie Downer. I believe it's in Blackest Night Part One, where the Flash is attempting unsuccessfully to hit on Hawk Girl, and when Jean he sees Jean kind of looking at him, and he asks, "What, don't you ever get lonely?" And Jean responds, "More than you could possibly imagine," in as stoically a voice as possible. But some, you know, some understated comedy from Carl Lumbly in this role, as well as all of the big dramatic monologues we've talked about already.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I feel like we do this every single time we do one of these spotlight episodes, because we've covered just who's who of the characters, and so many of them right. have been Justice League. But he's in the discussion for the Mount Rushmore of voice actors, right? Like, mm-hmm. because of the type of character he was asked to play also. And some people may look at that as you're playing an emotionless character, or mainly emotionless. Like, he's oftentimes just very straight-laced, very very cold, and feels like he doesn't have to put a lot of emotion in the things that he's doing or saying as this character. But there's still some gravitas to that. There's something that has to be there's something, I think, that you have to still do to communicate that this is not cold or lifeless because the actor that's reading the lines doesn't know how to act. It's because this character themselves is very sort of mellow and monotone and just does not show a lot of emotion. There has to be a lot to happen to this character in particular for them to either become angry, to lose their cool, to begin, you know, to yell. But for the most part, he's very, very sort of just one note as a character, not the voice actor, but as a character. So how do you do that and come off not sounding as a inexperienced or an untalented voice actor? I would put this up there as like the masterclass, because it does come across mm-hmm. as somebody who is reserved, maybe a little bit quiet, someone who does more observation. Like, I think that is communicated through his voice. He's observing things. He's absorbing the information. He's learning still about the different people and the way that this society works. So all of that is kind of communicated in this sort of mellow way that often these lines are delivered. And it's, some of it is can be come off as he's naive in some ways. Other ways, mm-hmm. It's just he's, you know, holding the line. He's the steady backbone of the team, never gets too high or too low. And I think all of that is communicated in just this mellow, soft spoken way that Mr. Lumbly chose to voice this mm-hmm. character.
Absolutely.
It's great. It's really, really strong. And again, we oftentimes will use this line when we're talking about, you know, reading comic books and hearing voices, but whenever I see a cartoon and the Martian Manhunter has a different voice, it's like, it just doesn't do it for me. Like this mellow sort of just dry, soft, comforting tone that Mr. Lumbly chose for this character communicates a person from another planet, but also a hero, like someone that it is not an open threat, is friendly, is kind. All of that is, I think, in that performance. And it's why I'd say he's in the discussion for the top names for best voice actors and actresses in the DCAU.
Absolutely. Yeah, he is on the short list to be sure. And yeah, there's a line he walks where, yes, like you said, it can be sort of monotone, but it's never without emotion. It's never without effort. Again, whether it is the more serious, even the more dramatic emotional beats like we've talked about, or his more understated, sort of quieter conversations that he has. He always brings it, and he's truly one of the best. And as promised, allow me to reiterate that for some reason, Don Cheadle, who was in one scene of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, got nominated for an Emmy, but Carl Lumbly, who was the best actor on that show in that season, did not. And that's a travesty of justice that has still not been remedied, and I'm still upset about it. So I just wanted to throw that in there as well.
Yeah, we will continue to allow you the opportunity to express your frustration and dissatisfaction with the Emmy nominees, or the people that nominate Emmys for that decision. He deserves reconsideration.
Look, it would be one thing if no superhero shows ever got nominated. Like, you understand, then there's like a barrier because of the type of show it is. Fine, but it's not.
Right.
Like, The Mandalorian got nominated for best series. Like, these things happen now.
Right.
And yet somehow he didn't get nominated, but an actor who was in literally one scene of the same show he was in did, for some reason. So, but that's really all just to say what a wonderful actor Jean's voice actor, Mr. Carl Lumbly, is. And from the world of animation and television, before we sign off here, Cal, we have a couple other categories we'd like to touch on in these character spotlights. And the first will be tie-in comic books. Of course, there is the long-running Justice League Adventures line of comics that went right along with the animated series as it was coming out. And the first one that I'll mention is Justice League Adventures number 2. Didn't have to wait long to get a Jean spotlight here, written by Paul Story with art by Craig Russo. And Russo, apologies, I should probably botching that. But a little bit of a Jean spotlight again. This is where I think the tie-in comics really shine in this, and actually really several of the ones that I would talk about today, is this one, issue 2, issue 10 as well. Allows you to maybe go a little bit deeper when you don't have time to do it on the 22-minute episode, right? It lets you explore those themes of alienation and then being the outsider and all of those sorts of things with Jean that maybe you don't have as much time to put focus on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's as we've talked about, it's a great companion piece. Some of those comics are goofy and have stories that end up contradicting stuff that happens later on in the actual that timeline or canon of the show. But comics are and always have been fun first, I think, for me. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is an extension of that. You get some great artwork, you get some great little stories that include Jean and kind of expand a little bit upon the lore that you enjoy and love. So if you can take it as it is, and enjoy it, and perhaps you subscribe to, you know, the greatest single app in the history of humankind, that being the DC Universe Infinite app. It's a wonderful app, by the way.
It sure is.
It's you know, they're all there for your reading availability at any time that you're sitting there and you're bored and you want to catch up on some. So yeah, I will always be a proponent of these tie-in comics. Honestly, we probably in the long run, because of our for the first initial portion of our lives, we had limited access to television. We spent more time with comic books and the comic book world of the DCAU at times. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, special place in our hearts for these comics and for these artists and writers that worked on these little stories that expanded upon what we would see in a 22 or 44 minute episode.
Absolutely. So yeah, just very quickly, I'll touch on a couple others. Justice League Adventures number 10, as mentioned, written by Joss Siegel and pencils by Christopher Jones. Another story that kind of focuses on Jean's alienation, actually kind of gets to see how the other half lives, is after Superman is injured in order to nighttime, but this time it's Superman who's down for the count, and Jean steps into that role and sort of sees life a little differently when people look at him as though he's Superman. It's a fun issue, and a really tremendous cover on that issue by none other than perennial DCAU director and artist, that being Butch Lukic, along with Todd Klein, an image of Jean sort of standing there holding his head with a lot of angry human faces, sort of representing, I guess, the minds he's read and the way that people look at him as this alien monster. So it's a great cover and a pretty fun issue as well. And then the last one I think that's really worth mentioning is issue 16 of Justice League Adventures, where Jean is investigating a traitor on the Watchtower. In fact, it's the return of the not called the Imperium aliens, as they are apparently about to mount another invasion of Earth, and there's worry that the Justice League might have a traitor in their midst, only at the very end for it to turn out that Jean himself was the traitor, and that the alien had been implanted with sort of false memories. And ultimately, though, the heroic nature of Jean, of taking on Jean's life, he Zetas it. He takes on he impersonates the guy so well that he realizes that he wants to be a hero like Jean is, like the rest of the Justice League is, and ultimately sacrifices himself while Batman and Jean escape. That issue written by Scott McCloud and Judith Hanson with pencils by John Delaney. A very fun one. And again, just another example of you being able to expand and flesh out some of those fun stories from the show that maybe felt like there was more story left to tell. So those are, I would say, the seminal tie-in issues that focus on Jean from Justice League Adventures. We perhaps might have one or two more to mention in future. But Cal, it's time for, I think, maybe the most fun part of a lot of these character spotlights is, and it's time to talk about toys.
That's right. Let's go.
So, of course, Justice League was the first show after Kenner/Hasbro lost that master animated DC cartoon license, and it went over to Mattel. And first things first, minus Hawk Girl, of course, who came a little bit later, we had these original releases of these six Justice League members with their adjoining little stands, which of course formed the word Justice League, and each stand had a character's symbol and name on it as well. That original release, as we've talked about with the other character spotlights, this these new Justice League toys, these new Mattel Justice League toys, pretty special place in our heart. And obviously that would expand into an unlimited JLU line, which we will talk about in future episodes. But yes, this first John release, like, they kind of nail it. Like, he looks like he walked right out of the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Those first original six, and then ultimately the seventh, when they eventually added Hawkgirl to the roster, those figures still stand up. I think at this point, they are sort of miniature dumbed down versions of the larger vinyl figures, which we'll talk about here in a second, but it is very much a smaller version, miniature version of that figure. 5 points of articulation only. That means you're only moving arms and legs up and down. But this was a big one because this was the first ever opportunity that we had at owning a Martian Manhunter figure. I remember I was so desperate for a Martian Manhunter figure, I made a custom Martian Manhunter where I had taken another figure and carved his hair off and painted him green, and he was going to be Martian Manhunter. You know, so desperate for a figure of this particular character. So I remember when these figures were announced, being very, very concerned that Jean was going to be hard to find, because of course you're going to be able to find the Superman and the Batman figures. They're plentiful. You know, the executives know that little Johnny wants to get a Batman or a Superman figure, but really how many people want a green alien figure? You know, Jean's not exactly like a household name at this point. In fact, he's in the logo for the Justice League. He's in the back. He and Hawkgirl are pulling up the rear on the roster there. So they know where their place is as far as that's concerned. So I was very concerned. I remember the first time that I was able to find one in the store, and I was able to grab it at Toys R Us back in the day, grabbed it from Toys R Us. Very happy to add that to my collection. As you mentioned, comes with a little stand there, so you can build the whole Justice League stand, and it comes with a little Jean lenticular card, which switches between a logo that I didn't know that existed for the Martian Manhunter. It's kind of like a, I don't know what it is. It looks like a piece of pie, a gold piece of pie or something like that. And it just says Martian Manhunter around that, or not a piece of pie, a whole pie kind of sectioned off. And then it switches to the stock image of Martian Manhunter with his hands on his hips flying. So very cool. Those figures displayed look awesome with the cards behind them. And it is very faithful to how the character looks in the episode. My only minor complaint, which they ended up rectifying later on in the Justice League Unlimited line, was the shade of green they chose didn't quite match how he appeared in the show.
A little dark.
Yeah, he's a little darker. He's a little sort of like a forest green, I'd say, versus I think in the show he was more of like a, I don't know, like a lime green, maybe a not quite ripe avocado. I don't know what color you call it. Definitely not that shade of green. So, but that was fixed later on.
Absolutely. And also in that Mattel, the, what is this, 4.75 inches lines? From that line, we had the attack armor. We got the deluxe figures. We had barely any villains in those original Justice League sets, but we did get some different versions of our heroes, and the sort of deluxe version of Martian Manhunter, instead of coming with like wacky weapons and stuff that he didn't use, they actually kind of made a pretty fun two-in-one figure where it was called Attack Armor Martian Manhunter, where you had the main figure, the plastic was him more sort of half in his traditional Martian form with the chest and the arms and a removable pointy Martian head. And then if you wanted to have the classic superhero look, there was sort of a big rubber piece that you could pop the head off the Martian head and put on his big superhero rubber. You couldn't really move the arms once the rubber was on,
right?
But if you wanted to sort of mimic him changing between his different forms, this was a pretty cool figure. It doesn't quite work because the bottom half of his body still has the blue underpants,
right,
and the boots and stuff. But it was a cool idea, and it was a cool way to kind of work that in to a line without, you know, they couldn't, because if they just made a completely standalone, you know, true Martian form figure, I think that one might still be on like CVS shelves or something, gathering dust. I don't know, that would have sold a lot, even if big nerds like us would have loved it. So the 2-in-1, a la a quick change Superman or some of the Batman figures, where it would be a Bruce Wayne with like a rubber bat cowl you could put on there. It fits right in with those, and it's a pretty good shake at doing an alternate Sean here with his Martian form.
Yeah, I would agree. I think they swung for the fences. I don't know that they hit a home run, maybe off the wall, because it does look a little goofy when he has his either way, he kind of looks a little goofy because he has like full arms that go like the top half of him, the arms go down to his wrists and it doesn't quite fit tight up against his wrist. So it looks like his skin is popping off of him. And then, as you mentioned, when he's in his traditional Martian form, he's just kind of half Martian at that point. So I guess you could say he's mid transformation or something if you wanted to. But yeah, it's a fun concept. Again, we're looking at a children's toy here. First and foremost, we keep that in mind. It's a fun thing. You know, we're going to transform little Johnny's got to get his traditional alien form to his Martian Manhunter form. We're going to do it. We're not going to think too hard about it. And it's a fun concept, as you mentioned. Figuring out how they were going to make a 2-in-1 figure work for this line, and instead of just doing a traditional Batman or Superman, hey, why not try the fun looking Martian? And hey, honestly, the sculpt of Jean's true Martian form, pretty darn good for what was on the show. So yeah, I would give this like a 3/4 thumbs up. Like it's pretty. Yeah.
Totally agree. Yeah, totally. Like I said, I think it was the best they could have possibly done, and there is good effort put into the sculpting of the chest and the alternate head and all that. So you give them credit from there. And before we get to the main event, as you mentioned, which we've touched on previously, I don't know if we mentioned this with our last couple of leaguers, but there are two Happy Meal toys to talk about, or whatever the other fast food brand. franchises
Burger
called
King
the kids.
Kids Club,
the Mighty Kids Meal, I believe was the Burger King one at the time. Uh-huh. I'm not sure if Subway ever had a name, but yes, we do have two toys. We have a Burger King figure, which was like a translucent blue Jean surrounded by a translucent green serpent dragon thing. Mm-hmm. And you press the button on the stand and the dragon fell apart, and there was your Martian Manhunter kind of mimicking the shape change. Cool idea. And exactly what you want for that's like prehistoric fidget spinners, right? It's just a thing when you're a kid, you just have that, and you just pressing that button nonstop for like an hour.
So your parents yell at you and tell you to knock it off.
Exactly, that's what that's there for. Yep,
for sure.
And then of course the Burger King figures were actually kind of, they were pretty decent. Some of them were completely immobile. Some of them had like moving arms. But they also had sort of adjoining stands that you could put together, except for Flash and Wonder Woman, I believe, were straws. But
this
everybody...
just in, it was called the Subway Kids Pack.
The Kids Pack. Now right. We're talking. Yes, this is a so this one, I don't know if we had the Jean. I know I had the Green Lantern, and I feel like we had one of the straws or something, and maybe the Superman, which for some reason the Superman was like the weirdly translucent plastic one.
Yeah, I don't never understood that, why Superman was translucent. Yep, never. I don't remember having the Jean. I think maybe we had the Hawk Girl at one point also. Definitely had the John Stewart. Definitely had Batman was also translucent. I don't understand with that one. And I think we had the Flash straw at some point, but again, the Flash was affixed to the straw. Yeah, that's a flashback in time. That honestly, as you mentioned, they were kind of faithful to the way the characters looked. That might be worth taking a gander at, and see if you can get a set off of eBay or something. They're kind of cool looking. The straws notwithstanding.
Yeah, pretty cool. I will say those Burger King ones also, they all came with a individual little mini comic.
Mm-hmm.
And then the eighth, it was, so there's the Seven Leaguers got a toy, and then there's a Javelin toy. And if you collected them all, it told kind of one long story. So those were kind of, we spent a lot of time. Here's a personal story. We would call our local Burger King and ask like which Justice League toys they had, because like I feel like we got like we got like the Green Lantern and the Superman that's like on a meteorite with a magnet in his belly. I remember that one. And then we were like, we're trying to get them all. And I think we actually somehow managed to get them all.
Yeah, for people who didn't eat fast food very often and whose parents probably weren't exactly thrilled, and those poor fast food workers who were calling on a daily basis to ask, what plastic toy do you have to give away to us?
Right. And I literally remember this because it's like so burned in my brain because I was, I don't know, 10 or whatever at the time, maybe not even that old. And I remember calling one day and asking, so what, you know, what kind of, which toys do you have? And the lady said, and I quote, the same ones we had yesterday, and hung up on me. And I was like, fair enough. In retrospect, I'm like, I'm fair enough. We were,
yep,
we were harassing these poor minimum wage workers, just trying to get our Justice League toys. But somehow, some way, we did manage to collect, I believe, all 8 toys and all 8 comics in that set. Yeah. So those Burger King toys are pretty etched in my brain, even if they aren't that great as actual toys.
Yeah, agreed. They're fun little things. I think if I had enough room, real estate to display like a whole bunch of Justice League stuff, I might consider getting those because they were kind of cool looking. But as far as displaying as a small set that kind of looks neat, I would say the Subway ones are probably more conducive to a cool looking set if you're looking to display them.
Absolutely. And speaking of items, if you have a little bit more room in your display case, you might want to look at these. Some of the, as we've talked about before, the best DCAU figures of any size ever made, these 12-inch vinyl Justice League figures that we got. The Jean one is no exception. As you mentioned, the smaller, more popular figure, just a smaller version of it, but pretty much just like you just took the original character models that they worked on for the show and you just made that into an action figure, a big 12-inch one. It's a gorgeous piece, as a lot of them are.
Yeah, absolutely. They are based on, from my understanding, I read this someplace and I could not tell you factually where I've read it. I think I just saw it repeated enough times on like little toy forums and such, but I'm fairly certain that they were based on DC Direct sculpts. Like they were character maquettes that were made by DC Direct, perhaps even for the character models, 3D character models. Mm-hmm. And they were then taken from those at Mattel, added some articulation and then kind of shrunk down to that 10-inch size. So because of that, they are some of, if not the most faithful representations of those characters. Again, Jean's shade of green is probably a little bit too dark, maybe 1 to 2 shades too dark. But overall, it is certainly an impressive piece. He stands pretty well, all things considered, and he does look pretty formidable. He's taller than the other figures. That's something else that we didn't mention. I don't think those Mattel figures, the ankles were a little weak because Bruce Timm characters have teeny tiny ankles in most cases. So they sacrificed the ability for the characters to stand in order to capture the realism of the character models for these figures. And unfortunately, based on the materials they chose to make the figures out of, which was like a soft PVC, the characters really don't stand very well. This Jean stands very well and towers over, as he rightfully should, as a taller Martian character than some of the other figures there. So yeah, it is a impressive figure. The 10-inch line, he probably stands maybe 10.5 inches, 10.25 inches, so a little bit taller than the rest of the figures. But yeah, very, very, very faithful interpretation of that. I love that entire set of figures and have it proudly displayed. That Jean is a vinyl piece of beauty there with minimal articulation, but still faithful to the representation.
Absolutely. And a rapid fire here. This just in, I realized there was another deluxe release of that of the Jean figure, and this one I believe actually did have a little bit of additional articulation, and it was of course from the famed and I use that very sarcastically, Justice League toy line, Cyber Trackers. Trackers spelled T-R-A-K-K-E-R-S, you know, because it's cool. And John comes with some sort of giant metal contraption. I believe it's a missile launcher and some sort of weird weapon you could stick in his hand. I guess this version's a little bit different. Like I said, it's a little additional articulation. And he has open hands this time, so you can hold whatever wacky weapon they gave him. So a little bit of a little bit of extra tooling to the figure before this original Justice League line was ended.
Yeah, it was I honestly, like, when they added the articulation and gave him those open hands, he sort of lost his faithful representation. Mm-hmm. to the character a little bit. He just kind of looks a little goofy. His hands are also just kind of weirdly just open. And so, like, when he bends his hands, it kind of looks like he's trying to do the robot or something. Didn't like the articulation added, even though it was more added more playability for the character. Not an improvement on the sculpt. Liked the original one altogether.
Absolutely. And finally, I guess we'll talk about another one that we've, I think, touched on in every one of these Justice League character spotlights, which was the somewhat ill-fated, the original version of the DC Universe app, where it was going to be like a streaming video platform and also have its own exclusive store and merchandise. One of its launch items was a line of DC collectibles / DC Direct Justice League animated series figures. And as we've talked about, those figures, it looked like they ended up being a victim of some cost cutting for a time, at least. As we said, DC Direct went away completely before being brought back under the larger DC McFarlane Toys relationship. Like a lot of these DC collectibles Justice League figures, really cool idea. I think we were all real jazzed about it when it was announced, especially after those great DC Direct Batman the Animated Series figures, which we've talked about quite a bit. In fact, we did an entire bonus episode just about the DC Direct DCAU figures, which you can hear back in the archives. But these this Justice League line was short-lived and not exactly a home run, as you said.
Yep, very underwhelming. A lot of potential there, obviously, with the excitement of the other figures. Jean is probably one of the most faithful, I would say. I remember him, actually, he was the first leak that ever came out prior to the DC Infinite launch, that I think it was around for maybe about a year or so, towards the dying days of the original DC Direct Batman the Animated Series line. There was a leak that this Jean figure came out, so there was some excitement brewing. As we mentioned, cost cutting, no extra hands, no extra accessories, none of the extra like little bonus parts that the Batman the Animated Series and New Batman Adventures figures came with. So it took a little wind out of the sails. The character, the figure looks fine. I think it looks pretty faithful to the character on the show. So of this set, there were some major stinkers, and I think there were some ones that they sort of hit a home run with. And this one probably leans more towards hitting a home run with. But again, disappointed. Should have come with like Streaky. Super Cat would have been a cool accessory. Could have
Of non-copyrighted chocolate sandwich cookies.
Yeah, absolutely. You could have had perhaps the Charlie Brown sweater also as an accessory. You could have had a lot of fun with different things here, but unfortunately we're left with just the figure, which overall, when compared with his other Justice League members, lands toward one of the more favorable ones for my review. But what could have been leaves something to be desired.
That's right. Well, we've seen McFarlane is at least willing to re-release some of the older DC Direct animated figures. So who knows what could happen in the future, but that will begin to wrap us up for this special character spotlight episode. Thank you everybody for listening, whether you do so on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or of course, as Cal mentioned, on the Pod Tower YouTube channel. We do thank you. If you like the show and you want to help us out, a good free way to do it, as we always say, is to give us 5 stars and leave us a review on whichever app you listen to. Those do really help us out, as does liking and sharing videos and subscribing to the channel on YouTube. That all helps us out as well. If you want to support us a bit more directly, a bit more direct monetarily, we do have a couple of ways to do that in the show notes. There's a little donate button on our main page where you can buy us a coffee if you like. A couple of people are very appreciative. And of course, we also have a link to our store page where you can pick yourself up a mug or a hat or a shirt, what have you. If you're looking to get something back for your dollar, we do appreciate if you support us any of those ways. And Cal, as we begin to wrap it up, we mentioned this is the fourth Saturday. Now we got one more, and a fifth Saturday, as always, that means it's time to take another trip around the multiverse next week.
That is right, Liam, and we will be sticking around. It'll be actually a 2-week journey in the multiverse, as we will kick mm-hmm. things off next week with a very interesting on-brand, on-theme. So as we've talked about, this month was a Justice League Unlimited month. So we talked a little bit about the Justice League. We landed on an episode that very much focused on the original seven of the League. So shifting from there, we talked about, of course, Martian Manhunter this entire episode. And next week, what do you say we look at an alternate version of the Justice League? That's always fun. And we have no better option at this point than to look towards the often overlooked, as we've talked about, but I think those who know just some of the great content and great stories that were told in this series. But little known fact here, I had forgotten it, in fact, before we discussed and decided to review this episode, but the person that kicked off the Justice League story arc in 2004's The Batman cartoon is a little old Martian Manhunter. So his initial appearance, which ultimately leads to an entire season's worth of Justice League content leading to the finale of that series being the formation of the Justice League, with part one of The Batman season 4 episode The Joining part one.
That's right. A lot to talk about there. A lot of homages to other famous meetings of Batman and the Martian Manhunter. And as we always say, just fun to get back into another series that we really enjoy that maybe doesn't get the shine in some of these other shows that we usually talk about do. So we can't wait to talk about that on the show next week. But until then, I'm Liam.
And I'm Cal.
And we'll be back soon on another episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.